to Make It Sound Fiction episode 37. We're the podcast that every week picks apart pop culture and media that we like, no take backs. I am your host, Nico, and I am joined here every week by my co-host,
Kyler.
And we have lots of cool stuff to talk about this week.
Dark Souls, second episode.
No! Okay. We talked about Dark Souls last week.
Dark Souls 2, then. Let's move on. Let's get to the sequel.
You mean the bad one?
Majula's cool. The hub area.
I think it sounds like a part of the brain.
Majula?
Medulla. Yeah, because it's like medulla.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if that was intentional. Yeah. Anyway.
Amygdala.
Isn't that Bloodborne?
Yeah.
Anyway, we're actually not talking about Dark Souls. We have not turned into a Dark Souls podcast, but we did have a lot of people listen to that episode last week, which was really super cool. But we are constantly moving forward to new things this week that we're going to be talking about. And one of them, I mean, it's kind of in line, you know, it's talking about the cycle that we keep returning to, the darkness, the angst, and that is, why does everybody keep wanting to make shit with the Joker in it?
but also, like, why in 2019? Like, I get it after The Dark Knight, like after Nolan's The Dark Knight, right? Like, everybody loves the Joker, so you really capitalize on people loving the Joker, but it's been a bit since that movie.
Yeah, it really
that
has
movie 2012? I don't remember.
I don't remember. I know it was a long time ago.
Yeah, but it's still just weird for them. I mean, I know that this, I mean, the movie's been like in the works for a while, but like, and I knew it was coming out, but it's, yeah. I don't, it still doesn't make any sense, especially when they just did like the Justice League and stuff. You know what I mean? Like they didn't, I mean, I guess maybe that's why, is because like Batman is still sort of relevant in terms of like film stuff still, I guess. But, because aren't they still making the standalone Batman movie? Are they not?
I'm not sure, actually. But
so I think like Ben Affleck like left or something. Like he's not going to be,
yeah,
in it, or I don't know. I just, it's a weird movie to be making when the Joker. I mean, obviously because of the stuff with Joker, but also just like I don't understand why anybody wants to watch a Joker movie right now. But sure.
Like you said, it's been in the works for a while, but what's interesting to me, so for people who aren't aware, there is going to be a standalone film called The Joker that is just about kind of like the Joker's origin story, and apparently it is intended to be the first in a series of DC-based films that is separate from the DC Extended Universe, which is weird to me.
Oh, is it separate? I figured it would be separate, but I didn't know if it was... I didn't know if it, by separate they meant, like, we're not going to mention the Justice League, but they are in this world, but so they're not at all, huh?
I guess so. I guess it's sort of like how Venom? Nolan's films were not connected to the DC.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking, like, maybe even, like, Venom, right? If Venom doesn't take place... Venom has no connection to like Spider-Man or anything.
Yeah, I think so. So it's apparently a dark psychological thriller, I guess, that features the origin story of the Joker before he became the Joker when he's still Arthur Fleck. And
yeah, I was about to ask, what is his name? I forgot. I think I knew at one point that's Arthur Fleck.
Yeah, and okay. He's a failed comedian. And he turns to a life of crime.
Is that actually a typical origin story for him? Or is that new? The comedian thing? Do you know at all? I don't know.
That is... I want to say that that might be new, but here's the thing, is I'm not well-versed in all of the different versions of the comics, so my understanding of his origin story... as it was related to me by, like, the Tim Burton film and Batman the Animated Series, which are the two big ones that I remember, is that he was... I'm actually trying to think what he was in... Because in Batman in the animated series, he just sort of comes out as the Joker. I don't know if we ever got.
Do they not ever like hint at it? Because like in the Dark Knight, like in Nolan's films or film, the whole thing, which I always liked about the Joker in that one, is like he tells different stories about how his origins, but that you never really believe him. So
yeah,
like, you like explicitly don't know where he came from, but like it's part of his character that he just sort of lies.
Yeah. Oh, no. See, in the DC animated universe, so like in the like animated shows,
yeah,
he's Jack Napier, who is the guy who kills Batman's parents.
Oh,
and
that's
also who he is in the Tim Burton film. And he has an accident that drops him into a vat of chemicals, and
he gets his face. Yeah,
yeah, he gets his face reconfigured, and that's why he wears the clown makeup.
I think that's the story of him in the games too, the Arkham like city.
Yeah,
games.
That he basically works for like the mob.
Yeah. Okay.
You know. Yeah.
I wonder if that was like a popular run or something that those took from. Like, I wonder if that originated in the comics too, like not in the animated series. I'm not sure. But.
Yeah, but okay. So apparently, years later, he forms his own like gang, and they rob the Ace Chemical plant, and he falls into a vat, and he like that's how his hair gets that color,
right.
And his face is all messed up.
Okay.
And yeah. So
this is a grounded, the new movie is a grounded, more grounded take on that, apparently.
Apparently, and also different. He's also a completely different person.
Right. Different person, but yeah. They're definitely not doing like, oh, a vat of chemicals turned him into something. It sounds like it's more like him just going
cuckoo, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, I guess, like, we don't know, but the trailer suggests
they make it seem
yeah.
like he's a comedian already and also a clown. And that's how he becomes the Joker, which is weird because the facial disfigurement is kind of, it's funny, the facial disfigurement is kind of a big deal in so many different Batman villains, like
yeah.
Clayface and Two-Face and
Even
Joker.
Even the Penguin, right?
Even the Penguin!
Yeah.
Like disfigurement or some sort of...
I never thought about that.
Yeah, that's actually
honestly.
Interesting. Yeah, no,
yeah.
There's a lot of like... weird kind of brutal tragedy sort of stuff in a lot of Batman villains,
yeah.
Which is all also why like a lot of the villains are taken to like the mental asylum, you know, Arkham
yeah,
Asylum
yeah.
versus like put into regular prison. But so this movie kind of like really wildly diverts from what I understand to be Joker lore, I guess.
Yeah.
And a lot of things jumped out at me when I was watching this. Obviously, I think a lot of things jumped out to both of us. And yes, it is a trailer. I know the movie's not out yet, but I think it's really interesting. For me, it's really interesting that we continue to talk about how things are marketed and what kinds of things are emphasized before a piece of work is fully put out into the world. And it is really interesting to me that we're already seeing something that's like, number one, focusing on a pretty unambiguously evil character. Like, he's not a nice guy, and he has never been a nice guy. He's always been extremely sadistic and that sort of thing. And they're making it sympathetic. There's also kind of a lot of what I feel is going to be some misapprehensions about mental illness, mental health,
yeah.
things of that nature.
There's definitely a focus on him being like beat down literally and then like struggling, like isn't there like isn't he like writing a note or something about like something to do with like people say like if you have like mental issues or something like and you don't just put a smile on your face or something
yeah,
about that
which
I
is,
don't know
which is weird but
yeah.
also a thing that's also weird to me is that he is shown to have a love interest in the film as well, who is Zazie Beetz, and she's like 27, and Joaquin Phoenix is 44. And I also find that like a little bit weird, and that's a very typical Hollywood thing of like the older leading men turn, they're always paired with like younger and younger women. After
they,
a point,
is he supposed to be that old as a character too, or no?
I don't know, but It says he's like a failed comedian, so I'm a presuming like late 30s, early 40s, yeah. Which is like not that
he's
big of a
not
stretch.
Like super young or anything.
No, yeah. But it is really interesting to me that this is like she's also Zazie Beetz's character is like a single mom, which is also like kind of a trope of like making younger black women always be like down on their luck, sassy,
right, yeah.
Single mothers. So, but yeah, so
yeah.
So what, like, yeah, you watch the trailer as well. Those are the sorts of things you also picked up. I'm like, yeah, how are you feeling about this just from the outset?
I just think, I guess I'm just worried. I don't know, because like they're trying to do, there's just so many scenes. It actually almost got kind of ridiculous how many scene, like little clips in this, or like little, yeah, just like little cuts. Mm-hmm. In the trailer of him just like actually just getting like kicked or something and then falling down.
Yeah,
and then like trying
yeah.
to get back up or whatever, and like I guess to be like trying to like make you pity for him, I guess. But like, I don't know. That's a weird thing to be like. I don't know. Does it feel too like? I don't know if this is like. I don't know. My initial thought was like, I'm not sure if I like the idea that they're trying to be like, oh, society is just kicking him down. And it's going to make him like, you know, like turn into this like character that's like a murderer. And
yeah.
It seems a little like weirdly broad, especially when they're also trying to talk about, I would assume, mental health because of like,
yeah.
you know, that's like, is the mental health stuff? I mean, clearly it's a part of the character, but do they ever actually like face that in any of the stuff you've seen? You've seen more Batman things than I have. But like,
no,
is it,
no.
It seems like more of just a suggestion or like a character thing, but not like a focus, right?
Here's the thing is like, I feel like a lot of other Batman characters have historically been mentally ill in a way that's sympathetic.
Yeah.
Because, and Batman historically in the comics as well as the animated series, and even in some of the films, has been sympathetic to them. And that's why they, and I mean, we can talk all day about how locking people up in a mental institution like Arkham Asylum does nobody any favors.
Yeah.
But there's a reason a lot of them go to Arkham Asylum versus like a just standard prison is because like...
Well, that's the funny thing about Arkham Asylum is it's not really depicted as a mental...
Yeah, it's just depicted as
a prison.
A prison for supervillains, versus like an actual mental treatment facility that like is, you know, big on, you know, like, you know, helping people and rehabilitating them. But a lot of Batman villains are not evil in a way that we kind of classically think is evil. They're motivated by things that are like trauma related or are like they're motivated by something that isn't like I just like to hurt people. They're motivated by some sort of like, now there's definitely some Batman villains like Scarecrow who's kind of a little bit more malicious, but people like, you know, Harlequin, who didn't even show up until Batman the Animated Series, or like Iceman or something like that. Is Iceman? Is it?
I don't know.
Mr. Freeze.
Mr. Freeze. Yeah.
Iceman is X-Men. He's Bobby. He's an X-Men.
Mr. Freeze only exists because they took that name or anything.
Yeah. There's a lot of like Batman villains who are sympathetic and are kind of acting out of their own hurt and their own trauma. And it's not really like, they don't, you know, like, that's more of their thing. Whereas, like, Joker has always been somebody who is, like, not a nice guy. And he, I mean, I feel like, you can make a real strong case that he does deal with mental issues. But they're more of, like, he's a danger to other people versus a danger to himself. And he's very violent and he's very sadistic. And in other interpretations of Joker, it's not in a sympathetic way. He just enjoys hurting people. And in something like Batman the Animated Series, he's abusive to Harley. Like, he's neglectful. He's really toxic to her. Like, he really mistreats her, and he mistreats a lot of people, which is why I find the idea of making him, like, a down-on-his-luck, bullied white guy.
Because I feel like it's going to be, like, middle-aged white guy beat down by society and then turns, and this is what you've done. Like, look at this. You've created this guy.
Yeah, and that the violence is somehow justified.
Yeah, that's what I'm really afraid this movie's going to do, and it looks like it's going to.
And that's bad. This is a bad time politically, and to make a movie like that, because number one, you're saying a lot of things that the movie is basically saying a lot of things that mental health advocates and mental health sufferers, mental illness sufferers have been saying, is that more often than not, people who suffer from mental illness are not the instigators of violence. They are the people who are on the other end of violence. They are frequently traumatized or abused, and that doesn't turn you into a violent person. More often than not, you have people who are violent against you. And so making him a, down on his luck, beat up guy who also is kind of portrayed in the trailer as having, there's certain things in the trailer that make it seem like they're also trying to make him seem like he has certain like emotional or developmental disabilities, which also is wildly problematic.
Yeah.
Of like saying that somebody who has, developmental disabilities will also turn out violent, also really weird. It's really not a good idea to suggest those things as being linked to violence.
Yeah, it reminds me it's almost like somebody's like trying to make a movie that is sort of about the way people will like sort of like talk about like people who like, do like mass shootings and stuff, like,
yeah,
sympathize with this like killer, because, and I don't know, that's like really,
that seems bad. Like
a horrible movie to make at the moment. Yeah.
At the moment, if not the last 10 years, like, this isn't a new concept of like, maybe it's a bad idea to do this. It's been a bad idea.
Yeah.
Mass shootings have been a thing for a while, especially here in America. But the narrative of like maladjusted white misanthropes has been going on since the 90s. Look at Columbine. Look at like Timothy McVeigh. It's something that American media in prestige media has been like this really overdeveloped trope at this point, because there's so many pieces of media now that involve like serial killers and mass murderers and bombers and things like that, but they're never called terrorists. They're never, the ways that these men are shaped by things like toxic patriarchal culture versus like contextless bullying is really weird to me, because violence doesn't come out of nowhere. Like, being violent as a response to things and not treating people with humanity is more of a condition of how society builds up white men more so than anything else, and not mental illness per se. Like, it's
it feels like it's just one of those movies. It just feels like, I just have seen people that are like, I've seen people like on my Twitter that are like, or not people that I follow, but just people that are like gamers or whatever, that are like, this is really like cool. And it just makes me think of like, gosh, do you only think this is cool because it's like you want to like sympathize with like a white guy being like punished by society and then finally gets like revenge, but it's like anti-hero, so it's cool. And it like, I don't know, it just reminds me a little bit of like Walter White and like Breaking Bad, of like, oh, this is, we're selling this like cool anti-hero guy because the world is just out to get him, and it just seems so bad. It just seems so like, I don't know. Yeah, I guess it's just like glorifying something that is not good. I don't know. Like, it just seems, it's so strange because I don't know. It just seems like a weird way to frame the movie, and I don't know why. It's just, I don't know. Yeah, I guess I just, the entire premise of trying to like to make your main character a character that is horrible and like kills people, it is supposed to be like abhorrent, is, doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
that just doesn't, I mean, which is weird because, okay, it's something I haven't watched this, but, and I don't know if there's any similarities, but like, isn't technically the Punisher pretty bad too? Like, does that show do a better job? Like, I don't know. I mean, I know people didn't hate that show, but
he's definitely mentally ill, but he's like, he has PTSD. Like, he's not violent because he has PTSD. He's on a revenge kick. And he's also interesting in a way that's like, Punisher in particular gets like adopted, like the like iconography and stuff of the Punisher gets adopted a lot by like really fucking weird like cops and army dudes, yeah, and stuff, yeah, which is weird because the Punisher is like pretty much a big criticism of like intelligence agencies and like the military and armed forces and the government. So it's like, that's kind of weird. I don't know enough about Punisher,
yeah,
to speak very like authoritatively on that.
Yeah, I don't either. It just reminds me of another show that is like putting the main character is the character that was a villain in another, in, you know, in the comics or whatever, right? Like, yeah.
I guess it's kind of coming back to this question, is like, what is the movie going to try to, what is it going to try and do with this? What is it trying to say? Who does it benefit? You know, yeah, like, who does it benefit to have another like maladjusted white guy character who's extremely violent and sadistic? What does that do? What does that do as a piece of media? What does that say? What messages are being reinforced? What is it adding to the cultural conversation, and what is it adding to the political moment? I don't think it's doing any of those things.
Yeah, and I just don't see why. I don't understand why. Like, I don't even want the movie. It's a bad premise in the first place. But why is it even a Joker movie too? Like, why do we need to be really sympathetic of the Joker?
Yeah, he is not a nice guy. He's sadistic.
Yeah,
he likes hurting people, and if you're going to give a reasoning for that that isn't just, well, he's molded by the forces in our culture that make him that way, and it's like, oh no, well, he got beat up a lot, and it's like, I got beat up a lot as a kid,
yeah,
I don't go out and shoot people because I know that's like, I know that's not the right thing to do, and I know that that's not a productive use of anger. Whereas, like, this feels like it's saying, well, this tortured guy, he's just going to go on a rampage, and that's totally justified because we're going to glorify it for, like, an hour and a half of this movie.
It feels like, and that's the thing, is, like, I'm not sure. It seems like it's always better if you want to sort of try to humanize, like, the Joker, I feel like it's really important that you do have a more heroic figure like Batman to contrast. Like, it's better. I know it's like not a trope, but it's like definitely like played out, I guess, of like, oh, Batman is just as bad, or like is like just as weird as like the Joker in some ways, that people have done in like the comics and the films and all that. Yeah. But even that seems like a better way to talk about that than to just make the entire film about only the Joker without Batman even in it at all. Like, I feel like you need a character like Batman to make that make more sense, so you can see the difference And like, you can see like he's really bad, but we can like hint at stuff of like maybe why he's bad, like they've done before. But like, yeah, he's still bad. We still have a hero. We still have a main character that knows that he's a horrible person. It doesn't I just don't understand the point of a movie that is like, I don't know if it's trying to excuse it because we haven't seen it or whatever, it's not out, but it just seems like the entire existence of the movie is trying to say, just because it exists, it's just saying like, oh, this is the reason, like, think about that, think about like, this is the actual justification, you know, we'll leave it to you to figure out if it's like, if it's okay or not. But I think the film, I don't know if it will, but I doubt it will from the trailers. I don't think it'll have like a specific point of view on it being him being a bad character no matter what. I feel like it's just going to be like, oh, that's really bad. But I mean, he did get kicked down the stairs. So maybe it's not that bad, you know? And it feels that way of like, it's a little hard to talk about this part, but I hope it is not one of those movies that is, or just like even one of those pieces of fiction that is just like, like, just think about it for yourself. Like, we've given you the evidence. So like, we're not going to have a point of view on whether or not the Joker is bad. We're just going to give you this like story of this guy who gets turned by society or whatever, by the culture.
But we're not going to go the distance and actually say something about it.
We're not
going to
actually say anything other than just give you these like facts or whatever.
Or these visuals,
like super dangerous because that, like you have to have, this movie to me is sort of, if this trailer is really what it's about, it has to show that it's actually not okay despite how much, you know, like beating he's gotten. It's not okay because he's not a good character. But I don't know if they'll do that. I don't even know. I didn't watch Venom, but like Venom also kills a bunch of people. And I don't know if that movie even does that either.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I was like looking up the director. So the director is Todd Phillips, and he is best known for Road Trip.
Oh God, Old School.
Starsky and Hutch, Hangover trilogy, Date and War Dogs.
Good.
Really punching above his weight class with this film, I think. Like, he's a director for it, and he also is a co-writer. The other writer is Scott Silver, who is best known for his films with John's 8 Mile and The Fighter. Okay, interesting. He also wrote The Finest Hours. He's not written a lot of movies. Again, these two people, I don't feel are going to produce something that's like going to have a lot of like really critical commentary on masculinity or violence.
And I still think you could do that stuff if it was a Batman movie. Like, I just don't think...
You could! Yeah. No, I completely agree with what you're saying. The contextualization of the Joker makes more sense when you ground it against Gotham as a place and Batman as, like, a tragic anti-hero / vigilante, you know, superhero.
Yeah. I think, I know that, like, trying new things is great and everything, but I just think that, like, the Joker has been done a lot, and it just, the best Joker depictions have always been really strongly tied to Batman, and like you said, in Gotham and stuff. Like, it just, I don't know, he is not a good person, so it just, I just don't know how you make a movie that is trying to I don't know why you make a movie that sympathizes with him.
Yeah, because I've always felt like the Joker was a counterpoint to Batman, as if to say, this is what would happen to Batman if Batman wasn't born into the kind of, like, money or love of his parents, or, like, the whole thing with Batman is, like, kind of, you can definitely talk about how Batman also is still like a violent dude in a lot of ways, but you can also make a point that like Batman was at least trained and given an outlet for the feelings he had about his parents being killed and his trauma. He was brought up by, like, you know, like, who's the butler? Albert?
Yeah.
No? Who's the butler in Batman?
This is bad. We should know this.
This is so bad. We should know this. Like,
Alfred.
Alfred, I knew it was an Al. I knew it was an Al.
Yeah, I was like, Albert sounds right.
Right, but it's not, no, Alfred. And like, Ra's al Ghul and stuff like that. Yeah. Like, he's at least given outlet and training and, like, you know.
And it was definitely a take on, like, some of the film, or at least, like, the there was one of the recent, like, what's his name? Film, not Justice League, but the other Batman movie before Justice League. Batman versus Superman.
Yeah, yeah.
I read one review about that was like, I mean, I'm sure this is also something that's come up a lot with Batman fiction, but like, you know, how like Batman, you could read Batman as like this kid, like still a kid in some ways, like he is not really grown up since like his parents have died. Yeah, so there's that too, which is still like, you know, like you're saying, like there's stuff with Batman that makes it interesting compared to the Joker. That I just don't think it really works unless your movie is like really damning of the Joker, but this one doesn't look like it. And I also don't think, I still think you can do that with Batman. I don't know, for some reason the Joker, this movie, it feels like a movie that should come out in like 2005 or something. Like, it just feels so old. Yeah.
It's such an old concept, and it feels like it wants to be like a meditation on like the dark, twisted loner, like a very like kind of like hot topic in that way of like, you know, like you're
like Joker is popular, at least was, like everybody or, wearing Joker stuff.
Like, or very like, it's like, it reminds me of the people who like really revere Rorschach from The Watchmen.
Okay. Yeah.
Like the, you're like, I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me sort of thing, but don't understand what the Watchmen was trying to say about Rorschach.
Yeah. They just like these characters that are like dark.
And they don't think about what the work is trying to say about them. So if you take the Joker and decontextualize him from the like superhero world of Gotham, that's like weird and twisted and like really says a lot about what the city does to the people it neglects, like, you know, like the Joker, like Harley, like, you know, Two-Face and stuff like that. And if you decontextualize that, the Joker is just a guy in face makeup who kills people.
Yeah.
That's it.
You know what? This isn't like super productive, but I think this movie would actually be, imagine if this movie was called The Joker and he was the main character, but Batman was in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that, like, would be interesting if like you get to see like the Joker do some like really malicious things to Batman, but from his perspective, and then that, and it's not treating him as like a hero. It's treating him as like, look at like the inside like machinations of this character from his point of view, but again, like specifically against Batman. That would be an interesting movie, maybe.
So
that maybe pays less attention to like making it incredibly sympathetic to Joker.
This is why I'm glad I'm reading the Wikipedia for this. It apparently does take place in Gotham.
Yeah, I think.
And also has, because I'm it sure takes it'll place hint. So long ago, yeah, it does actually have Bruce Wayne.
Okay, but I bet it'll be like, yeah, he's like a kid. I doubt it'll
That's what
I
think.
Because I think, because Venom takes place in wherever Spider-Man is, right? Like, I think Venom sort of hints, but...
But you're right. Without the eventual, like, without Joker kind of being set against, because nothing about the trailer really kind of gave me an indication that they're actually really going to say anything about Gotham as a city. Because one of the things that's really sort of a central thing about Gotham in all of the permutations of Batman is that Gotham itself is a character.
Yeah.
Because Gotham is the reason why so many people, like, there's a reason why there's so many, like, supervillains and stuff in Gotham. It's a city that, you know, once had this, like, massive financial sort of, once had this, like, you know, massive financial prominence, but obviously is dilapidated, obviously is, like, this fallen, darkened, you know, kind of landscape that neglects people, it forgets people, it doesn't take care of them. It could easily be used as a way to really talk about, you know, like, the excesses and abuses of capitalism and of industrialization. And that's kind of, you know,
and
like,
Batman has always been a character too that, like, works with the police and stuff too, so, like, that's always a thing too, like, even though it's sort of like, I guess it sort of glorifies that for because it's Batman, but, like, even that is something, like, you could definitely read of, like, gosh, like, but the police are definitely pretty horrible in Gotham.
So, yeah, no, there's a ton of corruption. There's a ton of corruption, and those are all really big things to kind of, like, focus on and to kind of use as, like, a way of explaining why these people are the way they are, but I just feel like we're not going to get that. And, I mean, granted, the film's not out yet.
It is a trailer, but...
It is a trailer, but we've seen this happen so many times now that I would be extremely surprised if this was going to go in a radically different direction, for sure.
It just really feels like they're trying to capitalize on the dark, like, Nolan's film, even though he did a lot of
Zack Snyder's films, too.
Yeah, but even his, like... He doesn't even have the Joker because it's not like, you know, like,
because he tries to go with realism, which is weird because he's dealing with Superman and Batman, are not. Yeah. A guy, an alien from another planet that's, like, enhanced by Earth's yellow sun.
Their moms have the same name. Gosh, the whole thing. Spoilers. Oh, I'm sorry, but that is the dumbest. That is the stupidest thing in that movie.
But, like, so, I don't know, like, I guess I'm just, like, God, I'm so tired of, like, the enterprise of, like, comic book properties being made by men and just not really saying much of anything. Like, I didn't like the Nolan films, like, as you know, as everybody knows. I definitely don't like Zack Snyder's films, for sure, either, because he's worse. Like, the only way this Joker movie could get worse is if you, like, let it be made by Max Landis. Like, that's literally the only way you could, like, destroy this even further, I think, as a concept or as a treatment. Like,
I don't know. Like, I mean, I did like the Nolan films, and, like, I think, like, The Dark Knight does enough. It doesn't make the Joker seem good or anything, but it does enough to focus on him. Because, you know, like, you know, in a lot of ways, that movie is a Joker film because it's so focused on his ideas about what Gotham should be and everything. And it's always like,
he at least has an ideology that's sort of like self-referential and logical in a lot. Like, it's logical to him.
And I think that's why that film doesn't just, like, kill him. Like, even the ending of that film's, like, sorry, spoilers, but even the ending of that film is, like, a conversation because he's a character that is not just a villain just be killed or something or blown up, right? Like, they pay attention to, like, okay, no, he is just gonna, like, talk to Batman because we care about, like, the motivations of both of these characters. And like, even though, like, like you say, you don't like that movie, but, like, and there is definitely issues, I just think, like, I just don't know why you would. I just don't get it. I don't get why the Joker exists, the movie, like, the new one.
The Joker is always going to be a foil to Batman because he's an agent of chaos. But what you say about that chaos needs to be very heavily tempered, given everything else about the Joker. And painting him in even the tiniest bit of a sympathetic light is going to just be problematic, no matter how you look at it. Because he's not doing things that are needing of sympathy. He's a really not nice guy. But they're never going to make a strong statement, I think, about the nature of that violence or anything like that, which is
it also kind of reminds me of, like, I do not remember anything about Sin City, but I just remember Sin City being full of characters that are horrible, And that was cool then. Like, when that came out, it was
Yeah, no, because Frank Miller, that's his thing.
But yeah, this movie feels like a weird Frank Miller thing. I mean, it's not as dark, it looks like, but it's like that idea of like, yeah, dark character that's the focus of the film. That's really cool.
There's a lot of guys making films that are either into like Frank Miller or Scorsese or Stone, and they don't really think about how those creators or directors or writers slot into the American media canon and what they did to normalize the like coolness of masculine violence without really doing a time. I mean, Scorsese had a little bit more sort of profoundness to what he was doing with that sort of stuff, but like there's a really deep, icky well of like masculine violence being glorified in American media that's like decades and decades, and this feels like another sort of like end game of that whole bit of like guys that were raised on this stuff and then they want to make this like dark, twisted thriller and then
finally
just,
make a movie about the Joker.
Yeah, let's finally do that. He really no one has ever done this,
you know.
Yeah.
He's misunderstood. The Joker's misunderstood, really, if you think about it.
And it just, it right now, if not the last 10 years, you can't get away with that anymore because we're seeing more and more actual shootings, bombings, terrorism.
If this movie actually does, like, the turning point as he, like, massacres a bunch of people or something, that will actually be, like,
horrible, really bad,
and I hope they don't, but it almost feels like they might. That might be
the
thing.
They will.
That's horrible. That's so bad.
Yeah, how do you, like, I don't know how you can like feel good with yourself and like go to bed at night, but you know, if it makes piles of money.
I mean, we haven't seen it, but geez, if they actually make that like the thing, that is so tone deaf. I don't know.
Extremely.
And they could do it, like if it, like right now, like I could see that fitting into like the middle of the film or something. Gosh, I don't know. That's so,
plus, there's also just the fact that, and we've definitely talked about this before, if you want to like go back and listen to our episode where we talk about the unlikable male protagonist
of BoJack Horseman episode.
Yeah,
I don't know what it's
called.
Where
we talked about like the unlikable male protagonist.
Yeah.
In prestige media, this slots completely into like 100%, except even more violent, I think, in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
like
in that way, it feels dated because it's not even BoJack where it's like this deadbeat sort of dude. It's more
he's a misanthrope. He's not violent. In the same way, like he's like, this is a lot closer to like Breaking Bad, except that like this just feels even more purposeless.
Yeah, because
like,
even Breaking Bad starts to really frame
Walter White as
like a bad guy, even though it is still a show about him and everything. Like I still agree, but yeah, this one just feels like he's like you're supposed to be really, really sympathetic on every moment, and I think it's just because I don't know. I was just going to say, like, it just feels like it's going to build slowly, so you do really sympathize with him. Versus, like, I mean, I guess it's a television show with Breaking Bad, but Breaking Bad did that, but then had the time to also turn it and be like, no, he's actually really horrible. But I don't know. I don't know. When is this coming out?
This will be out... It looks like October 4th, 2019.
Okay. Huh.
Well, man, we have so much time until then. What will we ever do? I guess I'm just tired. I'm always tired. But in media where we can barely get like nuanced female friendships, and yet we have another fucking movie about the like tormented, loner, violent white guy. I'm bored. So bored. I'm so fucking bored. Like, all the time. I'm tired of this so much.
Yeah.
And also just like the rebootiness of the, or not reboot, but like a retread.
Right. Another Joker movie. Yeah.
Another take on the Joker. Yeah. And it's just like done by even more and more boring like white dudes. Yeah. And I just, I'm over it.
Yeah. Because even 2019. Even Nolan's taking the Joker is really not super, super unique. It's just, I think a lot of it was just the acting. Like, I think a
lot of it was carried. Yeah. It was 100% carried by Heath Ledger. Like, that's the only reason that people like that portrayal. Because I don't think Nolan is doing anything exciting.
No, none of his stuff was super, like, super, super creative. It just, Heath Ledger like, just, did a really good job.
For me, Batman has to be both dark but also weird, and Nolan's take on Gotham was never weird, and that's what sucked all the joy out of it for me. It has to be a little bit campy. It has to, or else it's not Gotham. And his wasn't campy because he doesn't understand what camp is. He's very much into like, I really want this to be very profound and thoughtful, and except that like I don't like, there's just not a lot of depth there. So Nolan just comes off as being like a really solid, nice looking piece of furniture. Like, it's useful, but it doesn't really do anything for you aesthetically or thoughtfully. So it's, I don't know. Like, he's kind of the like directorial version of like a white tiled backsplash in a kitchen or something like that. So, you know, it is what it is. But
it just seems like we've definitely left behind camp in terms of superhero stuff, unless it's like, I guess maybe Deadpool, but that's about it, right?
Jeez Louise. Anyway.
I don't know. I just every single time we like, I remember that this movie exists, I just don't get it. It just feels like, it feels like one of those things where it's like one of those like news stories. It's like, there's talks of a Joker movie, and it's like everybody would just be like, why? And then it never gets made or something, but nope, it's here.
I don't know, like, the world was not fiending for another Joker movie, basically.
I don't know. The gamers disagree, you know?
Yeah, because I totally care about gamers, for sure. 100%. They always have good opinions. Yeah. Wow. Speaking of gamers.
Oh, jeez.
I think we're going to, like, maybe try to keep it short, because we don't have too much time left, but
the anti-hero we've always wanted to talk about, Tevis Thompson. It's really culture that has brought him down, you know? It's the culture of games writing that is he's always fighting back.
You know more about Tevis Thompson than I do. So who is Tevis Thompson
I don't even know that much about him. So apparently he used to be on like Twitter and stuff, but I don't think he's ever really written for any like games sites, but he's a game critic. And I guess just a writer. I don't know what he does for like a living or anything. I just know that like he has a little blog, and randomly he'll update it, usually at the end of the year, with a bunch of little like kind of like few paragraph, like really succinct, like little essays about his favorite games, or not his favorite games, but just the games he played. And they're usually like really scathing. Like, he absolutely hates Red Dead Redemption 2, and he hates Bioshock Infinite, and he hates a lot of the games that a lot of traditional games press typically kind of like, you know, love.
Fawns over.
Like, yeah. Or like, yeah, like he definitely really digs into the like, he's typically a pretty negative critic. I mean, I'm not negative in like a bad way, but you know what I mean? Like, he's very hard on games. And he's a really good writer and everything. Like, you didn't know about him, and I linked you something he wrote last week before the thing. When did he write the games critic thing? That was last week too, wasn't it?
It was last week, yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, he wrote something before that about like Red Dead and everything, and I linked it to you, and it's like a really good, interesting read.
He wrote something about Fallout 5, not Fallout 5, Far Cry 5.
Oh, gosh. Far Cry 5, yeah, yeah.
where he wrote this like really interesting paragraph, and I don't think that he's bad at writing. The craft of writing is not something he is terrible at, and I think he's got a very interesting kind of like quasi-conversational, quasi... So he's got kind of a interesting momentum and rhythm to kind of the things that he says.
Yeah, his stuff is really rhythmic and stylish and versus like really explainery and like long, you know?
Yeah, and like... I think that that works well for him.
Yeah.
And I think that in places, it works really interestingly as game reviews, because I think a lot of game reviewers don't have anything kind of interesting going on with their work. But like...
Yeah.
He decided to take swings at game critics.
Well, see, this is the thing. So he has talked about game critics a lot. Like, if you read any of his old stuff, like I read his Bioshock Infinite thing a week ago, I guess. And a lot of the bulk of that was about how game critics responded to Bioshock Infinite without being actually critical of it and not really understanding like the themes of that game and what it was really doing. And which is, you know, that was a common thing for a lot of like game critics after the game came out. It was like, wait, what game did you all play? And so he definitely is not new to like being critical of games, media and stuff and press. But this piece, which was like isn't it called like the failure of game critics or something?
It is called, Interlude, the failure of games.
Yeah, which he has another
critics.
One coming out that's like the second failure.
I don't know how much more you could write about the failure of game critics. I thought he made fun of everybody the first time around, but that's just me.
I mean, I don't really know how to sum up this piece other than like he's basically saying that like
games critics are terrible.
They're all terrible. Not just like, because he used to be really critical of like the IGNs and the GameSpots, like the big sites that just write these reviews that like, you know, some of them are pretty good. Like, you know, they've gotten better, but like he'd be very critical of like, you know, the 7 out of 10s, like the very mediocre, like reviews that are just very like lukewarm, like don't really have an opinion, which, you know, that was a popular thing to do, especially around like Bioshock Infinite. But this one is like, I mean, it seems like it's pretty directly saying, like, even sites like Waypoint are, like, not good enough. Like, they're not actually writing criticism. They're just as bad as, like, GameSpot and stuff, which is... wait, what? And, like, he even says, like, literally that, like, crit distance is bad, critical distance, like, which is the site that, like... brings together a bunch of like critical pieces like every week or whatever, but then also on specific games from a lot of like minority writers and stuff like that, like people you're not going to see on the big sites.
I
said that's bad.
Here's the thing, right? If you're going to be a notorious jerk ass about things, that's completely fine. When you start taking swings at things that didn't do anything but simply exist.
Yeah.
You go from being like a truth teller to an asshole real fucking fast.
And it's
fast.
Really blanket statement-y for him.
Yeah.
When he did go into like the Bioshock Infinite reviews, he was quoting people and saying like, I don't know what this means. Like when you say this, when I played the game, this and this happened, right? But this article, this new one is like, oh, yeah, just Waypoint, just general. I mean, he doesn't say literally Waypoint, but it's clearly Waypoint. He just says, like, yeah, they're just bad. Like, they're just bad. And crit distance is bad. Here's my favorite critical, like, things that I read. But, like, he just says, like, everyone's just bad because they aren't really, like, getting at what the games there are. And, like, they're not picking a point of view for things. And it's just weird to me because it basically reads... like the Bioshock Infinite one was like 2012, where it's like, are you only reading Game of the Year lists? Are you only reading the broadest reviews? Like, are you just continuing to only read the stuff that's like, I don't know, like I just don't understand, because a lot of games media has like, there's a lot smaller sites and there's like a lot more different voices. I mean, not, you know, maybe not enough still, but like there's a lot of other places to read games criticism that isn't just like the big sites that were like, you know, they're still popular from like 2012. So, and I don't understand why it's unlike him to just be mad at everyone. It's so weird. It's so like dismissive of all the good work that's actually happening that doesn't even take that much effort to find. And that's
He's going after Waypoint, which means he reads other sites.
Yeah.
But generally what he's saying in his essay is that critics don't go hard enough on things that they don't like, and really kind of like hammers in on like Waypoint as saying like things have complications or
like using problematic. The word, like, this is complicated versus complicated. Just saying it's bad or something. Is kind
and
of
that
his
they
point.
Still kind of like backpedal their opinion too much.
Yeah.
That critics are failing to like really hammer on stuff. And
stuff like, I think he mentioned specifically like somebody reviewing, like refusing to review games or talk about games that they don't like in the first place, really. Like somebody doesn't play Souls, so they're just not going to like review a Souls game.
Yeah.
Because they're not
and
into
saying
that,
that's
not okay.
Yeah. And it's like, but on the other hand, he definitely like mentions a couple of critics of being like doing the actual work, like Heather Alexandra and D. Alicina and like Jess Joho, but also mentions like Jed Pressgrove, who is notoriously like grumpy and contrarian all the fucking time. I don't think he's a very good critic, but that's me. So it's like he clearly reads some people, but it's really interesting because he also takes a swing at all of the publications that a lot of these like women write for and like who I, you know, just judging from what I see on like Twitter, who many of them were like, why are you making fun of like the sites a lot of us like write for? We're not magically different in perspective from like Waypoint. Like Heather Alexander writes for Kotaku and Dia consistently writes for Waypoint, and yet you're shitting on Waypoint. Like,
yeah,
I don't understand like what's going on here, but it's really
Waypoint
interesting.
Is publishing Dia, like,
yeah,
they chose.
Like,
her
viewpoint as like pretty like, you know, like pretty indicative of the kinds of things that they want to publish on a regular basis. So it's like, I don't understand why, like, this happens a lot. I notice this kind of like thinking happens a lot with like a lot of people do this to women in particular in a lot of like spaces, like, oh, this woman is doing it really well, so all of you other women are terrible at it. But this feels like, you know, like this feels like he's kind of doing the games criticism version of that. It's like, here's a couple people I'm gonna cherry pick, and they're all doing it right and you're all doing it wrong, which is really funny because like, man, everybody's got like such different ways of like tackling stuff and talking about games and like engaging with games. And I don't understand where he gets to come out of nowhere and sort of give this pronouncement about how game critics should be like more courageous to like really say how they feel and really hate on games and like, like, you know, delve away from the status quo, and that and then clearly wants to take swings at people who are doing that. So it's like, I just think it's extremely arrogant and presumptive to say that like you somehow have all the answers for how game criticism works. And I also wrote like a whole long thread about how I think it's really funny that this guy is coming out of nowhere to like basically say, well, you should hate games more, you should like really get in your feelings and like be passionate about like hating shit, when it's like, it's really hard for a lot of people to do that professionally or have the time or the money or the resources to do that. But honestly, like most of what I see in Tevis Thompson's writing is somebody who like has never developed his arguments in the last 5 years.
Yeah. And I don't know. The thing that stuck out to me was like the thing about like, instead of saying like stuff is complicated, just say it's bad or whatever. And then to me, that's like,
that's,
I don't
bad
know,
as a critic.
Yeah, that's bad as a critic, because I think like there should be a level of like humility to be like, I don't 100% understand like the whatever aspect of this game that I'm saying is complicated. So I might like, and it's also not the point of my review or whatever, or like my piece. So like, I'm going to say it's complicated and I don't really know like all the implications or whatever. Like, I feel like that is like somebody accepting that they might not fully understand or not, might not fully Like, I feel like that's also a criticism to say, like, I don't understand how saying something as complicated is not critical, which is what he's saying, is like, if you say something is complex, then you're just not being critical. I don't see how, and like, people are hiding behind that. I don't think that's true at all. Like, I mean, maybe some people are, but like, when I've seen people say stuff like that as like the point of their review, it's usually, I don't know, usually is backed up by reasons they think it's complicated. I just don't understand why he is so unhappy with people not necessarily taking an incredibly hard stance. Like, I think there could be a hard
stance. Doesn't understand nuance.
Yeah.
I don't think he understands what nuance is. And I think that that's something that we've gotten more and more in games criticism since we've moved away from like the brainy gamer era and the new games journalism era, is nuance in criticism. Yeah. And we've been heading towards it, heading further and forward in our criticism of like, we need to interpret things through a lens of not just video games. We need to interpret things through a lens of not just mechanics. We need to interpret things through a lens of that there's real people making these things, that is coming from a real culture, that is coming from a real society, that is in conversation with other things. So that really, like, just socking it to one piece of media, I don't think really does the actual work of looking and critiquing that piece of media. I mean, yes, I love dunking on something terrible, but you really need to elaborate why it's terrible. And I think that we've mentioned on this show time and time again is you need to be able to articulate why things that you dislike have merit, and why things that have merit are things that have things to dislike about them.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I don't think you're really doing a full, like, I don't think you're really fully grasping something as a work. You know, like, you really need to kind of like really get into it and really be honest with yourself. And I think that Tevis is still living in a world where he thinks being an angry, smart guy is going to get you places. And it's clearly
and
not
nobody's
gotten
pay
him
you.
Anywhere.
Yeah. Nobody's going to pay you to write a paragraph about Far Cry 5 because you need to go into that deeper. Like, that's just also not how the business of it works, too. Like, nobody. Dia can't write a paragraph about Tomb Raider and call it good. Like, people can't do that.
And I understand that, like, if it's his blog, he can write whatever he wants. I wrote on a blog for a really long time. But here's the thing. The thing about writing on your own blog is very akin to writing your own stuff on Twitter, is that it's okay to have editorial oversight. It's okay to have somebody else like really kind of pushing your work and questioning your work. It's really good. And I think that that made me a better writer. Not necessarily even from just a mechanical standpoint, because I still think that like Tevis does have some mechanical skills and some mechanical chops, wordplay, that sort of thing. But it made me a far better critic, and it made me a far better persuasive writer, and it made me far better at my arguments and my points and my conceptualizations of things and how I actually talked about art. And I think that Tevis also disconnects himself from other critics.
Yeah.
He's obviously reading some of them for sure, because he can name drop them, but he's clearly not absorbing their work, because for me, that's the thing that makes you improve so much of a critic, is seeing how other critics operate and then sort of like taking that into yourself and saying, well, this is how they sort of approach this work. How do I do this similarly? How do I veer away from that? Like, what are the similarities and differences in how I think about these things? But I always feel that when I go into like check something or like critique something, that I'm always looking at what my peers are doing and what my betters are doing and saying, well, how do I agree with them? How do I disagree with them? What does this mean that I disagree with them? What does it mean that I agree with them? Like, what are they doing that's essential? And what am I doing that's essential? And having that conversation. And I just don't think he's doing that. And I think that that's why he feels like he can make this like grand summarization, and why he can like snub his nose at it, is he thinks that he's like better than all these people. Plus, if you go and say that Dunkey from fucking YouTube is a better critic than actual video game critics because he occasionally says something thoughtful about a video game in his, like, comedy YouTubes. Okay. I just can't take your opinion seriously
like,
at all.
Like, when he said that, I was like, you know, obviously Noah Gervais has, like, two-hour videos and stuff, but, like, his criticism to me is, like, better than Dunkey videos because he's incredibly thorough and definitely has something to say about whatever it is, whatever he's playing.
Noah Gervais is like in the year 3018, as far as I'm concerned. Like, dude's way thinking ahead of, like, how to approach YouTube video game criticism, for sure. Dunkey makes comedy videos.
Yeah.
And
we're not saying comedy doesn't, like, get at criticism, right? Like, he
but
definitely
I don't think
does,
Dunkey's
but...
aim at all is to ever do that. Like, he's making funny, entertaining videos, and that's completely fine. What he's not doing is looking to really say something about video games.
I mean, I think people do like him. I don't watch him, to be honest, but from what I've heard is, like, people do like his honesty, which... is a thing,
but honesty doesn't necessarily make good criticism.
No, but I think that's what. But I think that's what Tevis is saying: is honesty does make a good criticism, and
but
I.
But only honesty that he feels is
only,
harsh enough.
Yeah,
and that's
and I
not
think that's an issue. Yeah,
that ideology is. I'm just telling it like it is.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
isn't criticism. That's
and
just
I,
being
there's
a jerk.
There's a lot of value. As a critic and just as writing things for people is to unpack why stuff is bad. And I'm not even saying, like, to explain it necessarily, but, like, I don't think... I feel like, I don't know, I've always found that, like, if you just have, like, some tweet... I don't know, tweet-length take on some game, often your criticism is better if you just, like, if you start to unpack it and start to think about, like, okay, wait a minute, so why don't I actually like this about the game? Like, what does that say? What is that in the context of, like, you know, current culture and everything? And you, that doesn't, like, his, I mean, I like his writing, but he rarely, unless it's, like, because sometimes he'll do a lot of little paragraphs for games, and then, like, Red Dead Redemption 2, he had, like, two essays about. And it's like the big ones he really unpacks stuff, but in the short ones he doesn't. And I'm not saying he has to, but if he wants every review or every, like, critical piece to be like the short paragraphs, which I think is basically what he's saying, that's, you can't write like, or you can, but, like, writing like that is not very productive really either. Like, I think it could lead to also just, like, bad criticism. Like the Dunkey videos, like the ones I've seen are just like, okay, he has a stance on this game, but, like, he didn't really say much other than just that he didn't like things, which is not very good criticism to me.
He wants provocation. That's what he wants. He wants short, snappy, provoking things and not complicated feelings. And it's interesting
because...
he wants
to dismiss everything, and I don't think that's very good.
He wants drama, and he wants messiness, but I feel like he's the kind of guy... that if anybody got truly dramatic or messy or, you know, like, God forbid, be a provocateur about something that he liked or even his work, as we are doing right now, he would lose his fucking mind.
Yeah.
Like, the line where he's like, less critical distance, more contrapoints, is... that's a skewer on somebody doing really amazing work collectively to try and further video game discourse and critique, and then pitting them against another person who isn't even doing video game criticism, but is trying to, like, unpack sociological phenomenon in, like, an entertaining way. And those are two very different things, and both of them have merit. And I don't know why you need to pit critical distance against contrapoints when neither of those two entities or people want to be put into a sentence like that. It's insulting, and it's upsetting, and it's also, like, not very fair to either of their work, you know?
He just doesn't seem to understand how people who are not, like, staffed white dudes have to write, like, criticism at all. He doesn't seem to he, like, fundamentally misunderstands it. Yeah, yeah. Like, people like, can't just, like, the crit distance is amazing because there's so many people that got...
Who never get promoed anywhere else.
Yeah, like, I think even, like, Heather Alexandra was on there a lot, you know? Like, she, I mean, yeah, she's at Kotaku now, but, like,
that's how people grow. She got her start other places.
Yeah, so, like, yeah, to bash critical distance seems like, whoa, okay.
I know where your head is at now, and you want people to be, like, more messy and less about their, like, complicated feelings, which also, by the way, can read very much as, like, a veiled... I feel like that is very much a veiled statement and a way of saying that, like, even the, like, dude critics that he's taking shots at, like, say, I don't know, Austin Walker... he's basically saying, like, I feel like he's calling, in not so many words, that there is a definite, like, feminine quality to a lot of video games criticism that needs to be more, like, angry and brash and ill-mannered. And I'm just like, that ain't it, my guy.
Yeah, like not just a bunch about feelings or whatever. Like, we're just going to write about how this game makes me feel. Instead, just write about how it sucks. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, and that just reminds me of, like, zero punctuation, and I just don't give a shit. So.
He just really doesn't understand that being a critic is pretty vast, like, in the angles and point of views you can have. It's not just being dismissive and, like, or going left or right. Like... it's so weird for him to say that to me, because he usually is more nuanced. Like, his Red Dead thing is pretty nuanced, but then he turns around and says that everybody else, like, needs to stop being nuanced. It's so, I don't know. It was a weird piece.
It has a real contempt to it that I really don't like.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Like,
and it's also just coming from a white guy that has, like, can't say any, like you can't say that stuff. Like, I don't know, like, you have no, I don't know, like, you, he gets to just write, like, blog posts and stuff, and other people have a lot more other struggles and, like, stuff to deal with in terms of, like, not everybody can just write blog posts. Like, I don't understand.
When I was writing a blog, and I vaguely, like, I did a lot of blog posts about how World of Warcraft had sexism in it, and this was not even the most scathing thing I ever said, and I also was, like, pretty in love with that game regardless. I got death threats.
Yeah.
Has Tevis Thompson ever gotten a death threat for vaguely saying anything was bad? Like, I don't know.
And also, like, you couldn't write that probably for any of the big sites either.
No.
Right? Like, you couldn't pitch that. Nobody would want to let you
write
that.
Like, I mean, maybe now, but only if World of Warcraft had, like, a news peg to hang on. Like, just,
but I still,
you know,
think, like getting a woman to write about, like, a game that's, like, super sexist is still a hard thing for sites. There's still something sites don't do that often. Or not.
Well,
as
it's
long,
also,
yeah.
like, the fact that you're saying that, like, criticism isn't doing enough to, like, really dig into games, and then has the gall to, like, mention Dia's work. Dia, like, definitely comes into her work with, like, this very, you know, like, reasoned and pretty strong and pretty passionate ability to kind of just dismantle a lot of what we, like, take as, like, traditions in gaming. Guess what? It also still gets her an incredible amount of harassment all the fucking time. So don't you dare come after anybody that I know with the whole, like, well, we're just not talking, we're just not really, like, being provocative enough and really saying we hate stuff enough, because the gaming community will absolutely go after people, marginalized people, more often than not, for saying boo about any fucking game. So don't you fucking dare, Tevis Thompson, you fucking shit. Like, and that's all I have to say about it. That's the end of it. You fucking little shit.
People only want scathing reviews of the FPS in the frame rate in Anthem or the loading screens.
If Tevis Thompson wants there to be more scathing criticism, he needs to, like, pony up and make the gaming community safer for marginalized writers. I'm sorry. Like, yeah. Just go fuck yourself. Like, go fuck yourself. Whatever. I think we've gone well over our usual time. I got to our feelings. We got
at least
our
it was
feelings.
A really positive episode of us enjoying yeah. things, you know?
I enjoy things all the time, like 100%, you know? So it's like, anyway, Tyler, where can we find you on the internet?
I'm at Tyler Culp on Twitter, TylerColp. I write for BlizzardWatch.com. I also stream for BlizzardWatch, twitch.tv/BlizzardWatch.
And you can find me on Twitter yelling about things at Apple Cider Witch. I also stream at Blizzard Watch as well. If you like this show, you can follow us on Twitter. That's MISFcast. On Twitter, you can tweet your comments or your questions at us. Or if you do have any other questions or comments, you can write to us at makeitsoundfiction@gmail.com. Also, if you like the show, please rate and review us on iTunes as well. And if you love the show, please tell all your friends, retweet our tweets, tell everybody you know about it. It really helps us out. And our intro and outro music was done by Maddie Myers. And you can find everything that she does at middymyers.net. That's MIDIMYERS.net or Middie Myers on Twitter. And it's a good show. And we'll see y'all next week.
Bye.
Bye.